Our friend Jim Houston of the NHL and Sportsnet, and who has called all this series, is joining us to chat a little bit. Huey, another Game 7. You've been down this road before. Are there any takes from Game 6 in any series? Anything you've noticed that applies to Game 7s? Or is everyone different, unique?
I think they are all separate unto themselves. I don't think momentum carries from game to game. It certainly hasn't in this series. It's just a different story being told tomorrow night from what we saw yesterday. What I did gather from yesterday, and I was really interested to see how Boston would respond, because I look at the Bruins a bit like I look at Pittsburgh, a bit like I look at the Los Angeles Kings and Chicago Blackhawks, and I wonder if their top guys who have played so much hockey over the last few years would have the enthusiasm, would dig in and play as hard as they could and open the door for another run. And I saw Brad Marchand play the way he did. Something's going on with Bergeron. He wasn't spectacular, but he's steady and he never loses a faceoff. And Chara dug in, and so that answered my question. So I know that they'll be ready tomorrow night, and I think that the Leafs will be too. I'm quite looking forward to this because even though it's the third time in 7 years, even though it's – so let's forget about 2013, but let's look at the last 2 years. The Maple Leafs are so entirely different from last year, and I think the Bruins are a little better. I think the Leafs have improved more, but they are eminently capable of winning in Boston, and I think this is going to be a great Game 7.
So Brian Lawton was on with us earlier, and we forgive him because he has not watched every Maple Leaf game this season, as the rest of us have, or most of them at least, and maybe doesn't understand the frustration that Leaf fans have with Babcock and his reluctance to make dramatic change. But he suggested that Babcock should double shift Marner and should put Matthews, and should put Matthews on the wing on Tavares's line on occasion. Is there any chance in your vision that we will see that? I don't think there's a chance in hell. But do you?
Not that particular move, because I think it weakens him at center, especially without Nazem Kadri, and especially the way Nylander played yesterday, which wasn't particularly good. So they need a game out of him, and they need that strength down the middle. I would like to see him make some adjustments. I've watched Bruce Cassidy, and you have too, through this series, change his lineup, change his lines, his matchups, anything that he can do. Bruce is pressing some buttons trying to win games, and it's helped him. And Mike has been content to just stay and go steady as she goes and confident that it's going to work. Now, I'm sort of okay with that, and I especially was going into Game 6, because you couldn't argue with the fact that they were up in the series and he hadn't changed anything and they had a chance to close him out. But now they both have a chance to close out, and I'm not sure what Bruce is going to do, but Mike has got to do something to get Tavares and Marner into the game. Since game number one, they each have 2 assists, and give them credit for doing a great job in the match game against Bergeron. But they haven't always played in the games in Boston, the last 2 games in Boston. They haven't always played against that line, and they didn't have great success when they got some shifts against the fourth line. But I would play the heck out of that line. I wouldn't necessarily change the lines. I'd play the heck out of the Matthews line, and I would make some adjustments. I would anyway. I don't get to do it, but I'd love to see put Marleau down on the fourth line and get Trevor Moore up on the third line because he's fast, maybe even Tyler Ennis, and give Nylander somebody else to work with. But I do agree with what Brian said, and that is you have to make some adjustments, especially in a Game 7, and give yourself every opportunity to win, and that means Matthews and Tavares and Marner play a ton.
Would you double shift on any kind of regular basis? Can you double shift both lines, the Tavares line and the Matthews line?
Well, I think you still have to be mindful of your matchup, but you primarily get that with your defense. So you really have to, you want to be careful. One of the things that you always think is, boy, why doesn't he try and get Tavares out there or Matthews out there and jump the third line or the fourth line of the Boston Bruins, especially the fourth line, which hasn't played a lot and hasn't played particularly well. Well, as soon as you do that, then you know that the Bergeron line is coming up next. So you always have to save one of those lines and be safe in that regard, I think. But what you can do is give the Bruins a steady diet of those two lines. Like, play the heck out of them and don't save anything. Get your best offensive players on the ice and get them against everybody. And so when the Bruins are at their best, they do some matchups, but they do less of it than the Leafs and Mike Babcock. And during the regular season, they look for their defensive matchups. But largely, when they've been really good the last couple of years with Bruce Cassidy, they just roll their lines and get everybody into the game. And that doesn't mean that everybody plays equally. But I would like to see Toronto just like be a little less finicky about your matchup and put the boots to them offensively, for crying out loud.
Jim, not to go company man here, but you and Craig Simpson have really called an excellent series. So one, as just a viewer, I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
One of the things I read today from Justin Bourne, he's an analyst for The Athletic. He does stuff for a good show as well. And he said the way the Leafs basically play on the penalty unit is very sort of they want you to make a low percentage, high talent play. And what seems very clear is that the Bruins can make that play. Their power play is pretty extraordinary. We see Marchand and Bergeron. So my question for you is, having watched this series, is there any way to stop that other than not taking penalties? Because it doesn't seem that the Leafs have figured out any kind of way to slow that power play down.
I think you'd have to almost break down some of the goals individually, but I thought that they made some adjustments and they were a little more aggressive in game five here. And they did a pretty good job against them, and they're a threat to score against them. They do make the puck around the outside. Now, yesterday, so people are really critical about the two power play goals yesterday, but geez, one of them is just pure luck that Marchand managed to get a 50-50 puck and then hit Ron Hainsey and it goes in the net. That's just good fortune. Good for you. Good fortune. The other one is a wing and a prayer shot off the wing, and the Leafs had done a really good job of taking away the middle, and the Bruins were just going around and around the outside, around and around on the outside, and David Pastrnak finally flinged the puck at the net and got the perfect rebound to Torrey Krug. So good. There's some other good fortune. I thought the Leafs were in pretty good shape there. So the adjustments that they made in game five here and were a little more aggressive at the blue line and were a little more aggressive at getting pucks away from the Bruins, I thought were pretty good. I'd like to see them do that again. So it is a problem. There's no question about it that the power play goals that the Bruins are scoring are a difference in the series, and that power play has been good all season. But the other thing that I would say to you, too, is that let's concentrate a little less on the penalty kill, because I think they can clean that up. The Leafs' power play has to score.
Yep.
That's the biggest problem I've got with their special teams. It's that's a power play that we thought was going to be great all season. It has sputtered most of the season, hasn't been as good as Boston's, and it's had an opportunity to win them a game. And they had a power play before Boston got one yesterday and could have had a 2-0 lead.
Jim, well, that power play has sputtered for about 80 games. The first two, they looked like they might score a goal every time they had a power play.
I mean, it's for the beginning of the season, we thought it was going to be the greatest power play ever. Yeah.
And it teased the heck out of us, and it's been mediocre since then.
Yes, it has.
Jim, from your vantage point, does it look like Mitch Marner is a tick off either in his physicality, his tiredness? Again, this is just sort of from a observer standpoint. He just feels like a little less fast in the last two games than we saw him obviously in the last couple of weeks. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm not sure entirely what it is. He's had a tough matchup, man. He's playing against really good guys. And think about this too. As much as we call it the John Tavares line, I bet the Bruins look at that as the Mitch Marner line. When they match up against that line, yes, they have great respect for John Tavares, but I think the guy who scares the heck out of them is Mitch Marner. And so he's the guy you're paying attention to. He's the guy you're taking away space from. He's the guy you're playing your best defensive pair against. And that's, and you when you want the matchup of Bergeron's line against there, you want Marner to have to play against Brad Marchand. And so he's getting tough minutes. It's really tough minutes, but he's an excellent player. And as you've seen, the Bruins top guys have broken out and they've scored on the power play and they've scored at 5-on-5, not so much 5-on-5, but they have scored. And so you can't just be a matchup line and shut the other guys down. That line still has to score. It can't be all the Matthews line. And you know that most of the goals the Leafs are going to get are from their top two, your top wave of lines. And so he's got to find a way to get open and get better. And yesterday they weren't good enough. Tavares had a pretty good day. Marner had a pretty quiet one.
Well, again, another question that we, you know, and I'm afraid this scenario is going to repeat itself when you spend so much time talking about one thing. You're there are only so many things you can say, so many observations you can make. But Tavares has one goal in this series. He had 47 during the regular season. His one goal was into the empty net.
Yep.
Marner, by all of our acknowledgement, hasn't been as good as we'd hoped he'd be. He's got 4 assists, I think, but hasn't been quite the dominant player. And it just occurs to me that when you place the emphasis for 3 guys on defending against the other guy's top line, believing that if you can shut down the Bergeron line, you shut down the Boston Bruins, and there's some validity to that argument, it's got to be more difficult to focus on your offensive responsibilities. Do you think that has been a factor here?
Oh, I don't think there's any question, Bob. I think that they've been given a matchup and are probably, and because of the way Mike Babcock chases matchups, incessantly chases matchups, basically he's telling them, go out there and play these guys to a standstill. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's a hard line to play against. That's a line that had 106 goals and 260 points. But they're used to playing against tough guys. So you need offense from that group. And I think it probably becomes a bit of a preoccupation for them that they're thinking, we got to get on the ice. We got to stop Bergeron's line. We got to stop them. When in actual fact, one of the best ways to stop them is make them play in their own end. And that probably has to happen a little more. But I think that's a byproduct of the match game. And I know most coaches do it. A lot of coaches do it. Mike does it more than others, but that's why I'd go back to what I was saying earlier. I'd love to see him free his guys up and just go play your ass off for a night and see what we get.
Jim, it's very hard to make a great assessment on Tuukka Rask yesterday because he really didn't get a ton of work. You know, he sort of did what he had to do and he gets the win. From watching the first 6 games, what do you make of his play? What do you expect from him game 7?
I think he's been really good, and I think he'll be fine tomorrow. I don't think goaltending is an issue at all. I think Frederik Andersen's been outstanding in this series.
It was yesterday, yeah.
The Leafs have wasted a couple of really good games from him where you think, oh, God, they lost that game, but he was spectacular. And you should win when you get a goaltending performance like that. Tuukka's just been steady as can be. They didn't get to him enough yesterday. The odd part of yesterday's game for me was what happened. The Leafs weren't bad early. Like, they went after Rask and they went after the Bruins early. And in the first 5 or 6 minutes of the game, and they got the Riley goal, and the place was jumping and better than it usually is. And you had every reason to think they were going to be good. It's almost like when those 2 power play goals went in, they stopped playing for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like feeling sorry for themselves, or I'm not sure what it was. And the Bruins just kept playing and playing and playing. And then, you can't get yourself back into the game. So, and Tuukka made a couple of big saves. He also got a little bit lucky. I mean, there was a
couple of posts.
There were a couple of posts. And then the one play that Morgan Riley's pass to Austin Matthews cross crease in the third period. That's just, if you watched the St. Louis Winnipeg game where Jaden Schwartz scored the game winner in the last few seconds, the puck just happened to hit his stick.
Yeah, out of the air.
It was 6 inches in the air. If that happens to Matthews last night, they might have won the game. But you got to get you have to be playing well in the attacking zone to get those kind of breaks and to get a chance to have that happen. And for the second period, they didn't. And in the third period, it was a bit too late and they didn't get a break. But Tuukka, to answer your question, which is your initial question, Tuukka's been fine. And the goaltending, I don't think the goaltending's an issue at all. It shouldn't be in Game 7.
I thought it was intriguing that midway through the game, I think the Maple Leafs had 6 or 8 shots on goal in total and dominated play in the first 10 minutes. And that they only got 4 or 5 shots on goal during that period is really quite shocking to me. And yet, it is not uncommon. Jimmy, I think this is the way this team has played this year. They just do not put enough pucks on the net. Not to the net, but on the net. Your thoughts?
They certainly missed a lot early, because that was a bit of a lie early on when you looked at the shot clock and they had 4 on goal, but they'd outplayed the Bruins, and you're right, for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But they were missing. They had posts. They were trying some cross seam plays. They were dominant enough in the attacking zone, but they've got guys who can shoot. So I don't think that's a problem for them. I don't think that. I just think what happened is they lost their way for a little while. They didn't play their game because they're a good offensive team, and they didn't take it to the Bruins for a long period of time. The shot clock told the truth in the second period when they weren't playing in the attacking zone, and there was a long period of time where not much was happening in that game at all, and that doesn't favor them. They need to, you know, especially when you're at home, you need to press that when you're trying to win and close out a series. But I think that I have every reason to think that this is the way I would look at Game 7. The Boston Bruins are a bunch of guys who there's some really philosophical guys on that team, and some guys who have played a long time and who played well over 100 playoff games. And if they're truthful, they're sitting at home tonight on the eve of this Game 7 thinking, you know what? Tampa's out of here. Pittsburgh's out of here. Washington's still playing. We got an opportunity. Maybe there's another cup in us before this band has to break up. And the Maple Leafs should see opportunity, but I'm really interested to see how the Bruins handle it, because they got some good guys that are just about like Pittsburgh, just about, as I mentioned earlier, maybe getting closer to the end of their game than the start of it, but they might see opportunity here, and that should light up their eyes.
Well, it raises this question for me. Whose grip is tighter on their sticks tomorrow night? Which team is likely to be a little more tense? I don't think that's an interesting question, isn't it?
It's a wonderful question to ask. It's a wonderful question to ask, because I don't see the Leafs gripping their sticks anymore. I see the way Matthews is playing. I love the way Andreas Johnsson is playing, and Kasperi Kapanen is flying around all over the ice. Their defense hasn't been a problem. There's a lot of good things about their game, and there's no reason to think that they'll be tense. And if they use what is their advantage, which is their depth up front, and push the Bruins back, then they've got every opportunity. So I kind of agree with Babcock, as much as his quotes get a little bit stale and he's always saying, oh, there's a great opportunity. That's absolutely what's going on. It's a great opportunity for his guys, and I'm really interested to see if they can seize it. You know that the Bruins, most of that group, their core guys, have played in, you know, since 2007 now, 21 elimination games.
Yep, there you go.
It's old hat for them. You know, they're going to be just fine, but they can be beaten.
Yeah, it's well said. I don't see Marchand and Bergeron nervous, but they can be beat. Jim, it's Game 7, and the Leafs have arrived in Boston, and they have made it this far. But I am curious what you think. How do you think, as we're now a couple games in, what has been the impact of Kadri not playing the games he hasn't played?
Frankly, Richard, I didn't even notice that he was gone until yesterday, because William Nylander did a really good job after he went out and played pretty well. But I didn't think that Nylander played as well as he could have yesterday. Don't know what was wrong with his game. Don't know what was wrong with him, but he wasn't as good. Yesterday, they could have used Kadri. I suppose they always could, because it would really help them as we went. You know, we go back and discuss that whole match game. If you've got your depth at center, it gives you so many options when you've got another really good center there, and it also gives you another really good winger if you want to make adjustments. And maybe that's part of the reason, and when we go back to the start of this conversation and talking about adjustments, there are a couple that Babcock would have made, and they probably would have been Nylander moving from one line to another, as Pasternak has, and that's happened all the time. But if you've got to use him at center, you can't do that. So there's part of the impact of Kadri. And then yesterday, when it was a substandard performance, I thought for Nylander, you could have used Kadri. But overall, they've got a chance to win Game 7, and I don't think that when Game 7 is over, win or lose, we will say, if they lose it, I couldn't say Nazem Kadri cost them the series.
Bob, if the Leafs lose, are you still convinced that William Nylander has played his last game here?
Yes. Huh? I don't see an alternative. I mean, even the trading of Kadri, which a lot of people have talked about as being an inevitability, I don't see how you can have a guy at 11.6, a guy at 11, another guy at God knows what, 11-ish, and then Nylander at 7. I don't see how that all adds up.
And trading Kadri, he doesn't make enough money to trade.
$4.5 million.
Yeah.
You know,
which is a really good contract.
It's a really good contract. And you know, I'm not saying they won't. I think there's a greater likelihood they move both. But, you know, we'll get to that in a month or a couple of days, as the case may be.
But what happens tomorrow night has a big impact on that.
Yep.
And how you see your team perform and who steps up, this is opportunity, and we'll see who seizes the opportunity and which guys can't deal with the opportunity. That's one of the fascinating things about Game 7s. And you know that Patrice Bergeron will show up. Some people here think that he's hurt, and I don't think he's had a great series, and maybe he is again, but he often plays through that. He never loses a faceoff. He's won like 30 of the last two games, and that in itself makes him extremely valuable. And you know Marchand will show up, and you know Chara will show up, and Rask will be fine. And it's so now, in their third year of this, the young Leafs played through that six-game series against Washington, and all of their core guys that they want to be around for a while played the seven-game series against Boston last year, and they're at it again, and they get another Game 7, and they're big boys now. And it's fascinating. It will be fascinating to see how they play. And they may be sensational and lose, and they may win. It's just that's what Game 7 is all about. But what an opportunity for them to play and show what they can do.
62% Bergeron is at for faceoffs on Monday.
And you know, it was dead. He was dead even with Tavares for the first few games, and then all of a sudden he just started snapping everything back. And that's the other part of their power play success, is that every power play starts with Bergeron on the ice, so every power play starts with the Bruins having the puck.
Yeah, it feels like at the point.
It's anecdotal, but honestly, it feels like Bergeron has not lost an important faceoff in the last two games. I'm sure he has, but that's just what it feels like.
Yeah,
and he it's almost like when he bears down and decides that he's going to own the faceoff circle, he does. And I give John Tavares real credit, because like through the first four games of the series, I think they were like 50-50. They were pretty much a saw-off. And then all of a sudden in game 5 and 6, he can't be beaten. And so there's another real problem with the penalty kill. For whatever reason, the Maple Leafs have decided that their top three center icemen, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, and Nazem Kadri, when he's in the lineup, don't kill penalties. And William Nylander doesn't kill penalties. So you don't have a center iceman who's used to taking 1,000 faceoffs a season, taking the draws against the best guy in the business. You send Zach Hyman, who only takes faceoffs when he's shorthanded, out to face Patrice Bergeron, and he's getting owned by him.
Mm. Last point, from me at least, I thought Jake Gardner played scared yesterday. Did you notice
it? I don't think he's right. I wouldn't like to criticize his game, because he's coming back off a back injury, and he is, as we know, he's a fantastic skater, and he doesn't look like he can move the way he does.
My point, though, Jimmy, my point is not so much that. I can understand that. What I saw was him getting rid of the puck almost without thinking, almost without looking. It was almost instantaneous. If he got it, he got rid of it. And as often as not, you know, one of those bad stretch passes that we've become all too familiar with. I thought he was afraid to have the puck on his stick.
And maybe he's still hurting. You know,
or maybe he had memories of Game 7 last year.
Well, that'll be interesting to see, because this is his house of horrors tomorrow night, isn't it?
Yep.
This is where it all happened. But I do think that I just watched him, and while his minutes increased, and in which game was it? Game 4, where it looked like it was out of hand. It was 5-2 for a while. He got his ice time really way up because Babcock started playing he and Dermott a lot more, and I thought, okay, this is what he's doing. He's feeling like this game is done anyway, so I got to get them more ice time and get them back to where they are. But then they get into the tighter games, and he's not playing Jake as much, but he's playing Dermott more now. Dermott looks like he's really coming. And that's a good thing. But the greatest part of Jake Gardner's game is that he's just one of the most fluid skaters and great on his edges. And I just don't see it. And I see a guy who's got a bad back and is struggling with it.
I think you're right.
Jim, last one for me, and it's the sports media nerd in me. How is it different for you calling a Game 7 versus a Game 3, Game 5, Game 1?
Just heightened sense of awareness. Just, you know, it's just, you know, that every play could change the game. I think it's fantastic. It's just terrific that, and you, by the time you get to Game 7, there are no secrets. You know what's going on. So if the teams make adjustments, you can usually see them, and you can usually see the results of them. But I think it's just fantastic theater, and can't wait. I look forward to Game 7s because of what they are. In our country, there's a Game 7 of a hockey best of 7 is just what you hang around and watch the game for.
Have a good call tomorrow. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, I look forward to it. See you guys.